Hi, and thanks for listening to I Wish I Knew That About Songwriting. I'm Keir Kemp, and this is The Spicy Segment.
Welcome back to the second of hopefully many spicy segments, if Keir can put up with me. How are you doing today, man? And how is that blanket feeling?
I'm all right. I smell a little bit of sauce because I've been in the unit this morning making sauce and it just gets on my clothes. Not really much I can do about that.
Yeah, because the man goes in and makes it himself, doesn't he? That being you.
Yeah, me and my partner and business partner, Jen. She does most of the legwork. I won't take all the
manager's all the glory, credit.
We made the decision to make it ourselves, largely because, long story short, co-packers have limitations to what they can make because they are obviously mass producing things. If we do it ourselves, we have a lot more control over the recipes and we can do silly stuff like burning loads of sweet corn that needs to go into sauces that a co-packer wouldn't ever even consider. So yeah, we have our own production.
That's such a wonderful segue, if we can, to music and to songwriting. And I think maybe, as you have actually carried this through to your business, Fearless Vampire Killers, your band, or indeed the way you think about business, you do weird shit. You do it yourself so you can do something specific. How do you think that's brought into having what I see as a successful career? I know you're a humble guy and it's ongoing, but what do you think that does if you have control as an artist?
In Fearless Vampire Killers, just for those who don't know, we founded our own record label when I was like 21.
Nice.
So early in our career, I, you know, formed a limited company, got a distribution deal, or what was it called, a P&D deal then, so it was packaging and distribution. So they paid for manufacturing as well. We put stuff out ourselves. That was actually born mostly out of necessity because no one would give us a record deal. And, you know, when you're 18 and when you don't know better, that's what you want. You're like, just want a record deal. That's it. Just because someone asks you why, you just go, well, because that's what bands do, isn't it?
That's what
they
you
get
do,
record
yeah.
deals. Early on, we did that out of necessity because no one else, we were a bit weird. Like
you still are, mate.
Last
you're
time
still
we
weird.
We are still weird, but we were badly timed as well. And the industry was a lot more closed-minded at the time. And no one wanted to touch us with a barge pole, especially from a label perspective. So, yeah, we founded our own. And like, I think bringing that into now, that was the best thing we could have done. Mainly because, well, one, I learned a whole lot. So I learned about, I had to run a business. I couldn't be separated from it. I had to think about where the money was coming from, had to do all of my own marketing, had to think about what we were as a brand as well as a band, which some people hate to admit, but you've got
that's the strongest thing that I remember. As I said, I'm not going to do it every episode. Maybe I will, but I remember every time I saw your name when I was reading Kerrang! Rock Sound, every time I saw your face and your collective faces, every time you guys played a show, I was like, that's the thing. It wasn't what I listened to at the time because I was into other things, but I was like, that's just testament to the fact I hadn't really heard much of music. I went, that is a fucking thing. What is that? That I remember for 10 years plus. That's something. Has to be.
I mean, maybe out of stubbornness or whatever, we weren't interested in being forgettable. And I think that's something I brought into what I do today as well. And I think that's what everyone listening to this should think about. You don't want to be like everyone else. Like there's everyone else already exists. You don't need to be like them. You should think about what it is that you bring to the table that's unique in some way. Now, I'm not saying you have to completely reinvent the wheel. That's a lot of pressure. But at very least, that don't be afraid to express yourself authentically and naturally. And that's what we liked. I, you know, my favorite films were like Moulin Rouge and stuff by Baz Luhrmann. Weirdly, actually heard him on Radio 4 this morning.
Yeah, he's still going. Don't you worry about that.
Yeah, he's cracking on. I just really liked that kind of super showy, super in your face kind of like style of filmmaking like that he did. And, you know, we were really into Sweeney Todd. We were into lots of like glam rock and like classic artists like David Bowie. Not that David Bowie is a glam rock artist, but he existed in that kind of that time as well as other times. And just load of theatrical stuff. We're really into fantasy. We're super nerds. We're just huge, massive nerds. And we wanted to bring that into what we did. I mean, people saw what we did and thought it was like super kind of overly thought out, but it wasn't, in the sense that we did think about things hard because we cared, but we didn't do it out of a kind of place of just wanting to be, just to get noticed. We did it
because that's like what constructive.
We enjoyed.
You just supercharged what you already had.
Yeah, it was real. We weren't afraid. I think that was it. We weren't afraid to do what we genuinely enjoyed, just because the world wasn't like in a great place. Like, ironically, now the world is much more open to that kind of stuff. But back then, like we said, people weren't. So yeah, I guess the tidbit from that would be, and again, I don't really know what these sections are going to become, because I'm not exactly any.
No, I'm guiding
you.
You're
exactly
just
any kind of hero.
You do whiskey and blankets, baby. You just carry on.
It's fine. But, you know, I'm still learning myself. So I'm professing to be an absolute expert. I have made some mistakes, and yeah. And I think from not necessarily mistakes, I've lived through a few experiences, and from those, I can say that, yeah, just do what you love, and that's it. Just you can't go wrong. Then it might take longer, but it might also happen overnight. You never know. There's a huge amount of luck in this game. So yeah,
well, can I also say
that into business.
What I've observed, because I think maybe people listening to this show might identify with my version of psychosis being a human. But what I've seen is, like I said, a brand that stuck in my head from the days I was pasting the Kerrang on my wall up until the fact that you talk about branding. You talked about wanting to be being one of the first bands that allow people to really not shed their skin, show their skin. That's what you guys are doing, you know, eccentric people. But when I played the show with you guys, not only was it sold out and it was popping and it was banging and everyone in the industry was there or knew about the show, but there were people much younger than me who are, shall we say, a new generation of when you guys broke up to when you came back, who have gone, I don't care about what happened to this band before. This band is awesome. These guys speak about things that make me feel comfortable about myself. So I wouldn't overlook the impact that had on me, which is why we're talking today, why we're going to spend more time together, why we're looking at your book and how we can build your company. And I've loved being involved with someone who's fucking nuts like you, who's a nerd. That's what this show is as well.
Yeah. But
could you, because you are humble enough to want to be learning, that's a common thing we have on this show, people that are great, achieving, but want to learn. Could you drag up some mistakes? If you have any particular stories of your mistakes, that'd be really helpful.
Yeah. So I think I've been guilty of the opposite of what I just said. What I said was be your authentic self and try and not worry too much about what's going on out in the outside world. And right at the start of FVK, we did that really well because we had nothing to lose. Yeah. And, we hadn't built anything by that point. But as time wore on and we got passed up for more and more opportunities, because the problem with the music industry is, unlike some other industries, but you know, a lot like even more, there's a finite number of gatekeepers in the music industry that hold the opportunities.
Yeah.
So that might be big festivals. You know, there's so many books, those festivals.
That's very true.
You have to be approved by them to get on them.
Not just labels, but literal one guy who runs .. festival.
So, a friend of mine, Sean Ryman, does most of the booking for Download Festival, and he's the guy. He's the guy that you need to.
Yeah, that's the name that's run true for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and then there's a few of those, and Sean is a really good guy, so that's lucky. But then there's a lot of people that, you know, they might not like your band, and if they don't, then that's it. FVK never have and still can't get booked for some other festivals. I won't name names, because people who run them just still see us as this makeup band.
But
that is
so fucking stupid to me, because you've got My Chemical Romance, who, from what I know, may or not be true, they were interested in you guys just before you kind of went, okay, we can't do this. But that is a household band. I was singing Black Parade on a bus full of private school kids with ties, rocking that bus. That's a band. But for some reason, because you wear makeup, maybe before them, I'd like to say, someone at some festival is withholding your ability to play live and earn money and reach people because of their taste, should we say, opinion, not fact.
Yeah, I don't even necessarily think, I wouldn't, you know, fob them off and say it's just that. I'd say it's probably what they associate that with at that
preconceptions,
time.
Preconceptions, yeah.
Like I said, music was going through a very conservative phase. So people saw flamboyance and they associated that with lack of musical depth and substance. So we'd get accused of being style over substance all the time. Because people couldn't, for some reason, they couldn't fathom that you could both look, pretty out there and care about the music deeply. In their minds, if you were like gregarious enough to,
make it up, mate, I don't mind.
To do that, then you couldn't possibly, you know, truly enjoy the art form, the, in its pure form.
Like you put your egg in being gregarious and not being music, but that's wrong.
Yeah. And I couldn't disagree with that more. And I always did. And now people are coming around to it. But the problem is the vast majority of most industries, especially the people working in them, are full of people that just kind of are conformists. And that's how they get to where they are. I actually saw this great video the other day. It was, you know, whatever you think of him, Jordan Peterson, I know he's said some controversial stuff.
I'd happily have him on this show, so don't worry.
But I enjoy Jordan Peterson as a thinker because he's very in touch with his emotions and he doesn't mind, you know, he doesn't care about what's going on out there. He'll say what he truly thinks. But anyway, he was saying this piece on being creative and if creatives get hired within the workplace and if they get promoted. No, usually not, because creatives by design question things. And that's not a quality that especially larger organizations want from people when they're kind of rising up the ladder. So naturally what happens is creative people in these big organizations, they get frustrated and they either leave themselves because they challenge authority or they get passed up because they're kind of a threat to the long held ideas of that organization. Because they're questioning things, they're challenging things. That's what creative people do. So naturally, over time, lots of, especially larger organizations, this happens in record labels and lots of other stuff, become these kind of hotbeds of really kind of safe
conformists.
People.
Like you said, well.
I'm not saying there isn't incredible people out there, like Julie Weir, who was was Fearless Vampire Killer's old manager for a long time, who now works at Sony, but before that, ran a label called Visible Noise, which was an independent label for years. She's an incredible thinker and creative and hasn't been marred by that slightly more bureaucratic environment, but she'd had a long enough career and has enough character to not, whereas a lot of people don't when they start there, they kind of get sucked up. So anyway, I don't want to, but I think we were slightly the kind of victims of that system, victims of the time. But, you know, we have responsibility too. I'm not going to paint this as in it. We were just
victims,
right?
Of course.
But I think, I'll keep saying this, like, I don't feel bad, right? I still have the opportunity to do these things now. That's all good.
You do.
A lot of stuff in life is about timing and luck as well. Like, you create your own luck, get me wrong, but there's nothing you can do to force the world apart into, like, seeing your point of view. And at that time in British music, at least, it wasn't ready. The USA was a bit more open-minded, but the UK was going through a weird...
If you look at where Youngblood is getting most of his shows, he spoke beautifully recently, Louis Theroux. It's in the US. Never had a top 40, but doesn't care. Because like you, he draws people that want to express themselves, want to be who they are on 10. And you talked a bit about it in your book, but what does that mean when an industry decides to do things that are reasonably generic to try and please as many as possible? Without naming names of bands, what's that experience in your eyes? I guess I'm interested because I remember a chapter when I was reading that you named a number of bands that were kind of just being quite generic. Why do you think that was?
Yeah, I took the names of those out at your... I think I'd
no, you did it before,
beer,
but I was like,
a couple
maybe
of beers
not.
When I wrote those. I wrote that passage, got a bit carried away. I think, are we saying from the industry's perspective or the band's perspective here?
I think you as a person. What was your perspective on that?
It was just disappointing, really. It's kind of like, it's a bit deflating would be the word, because you know, you, when you're younger and you go into music because you're just passionate and you want to express yourself and you want to create these amazing things. And we had, and still do, have such grandiose plans. We're currently hatching.
Yeah, as you should.
And
I've been inside your hatching egg, and you welcomed us into the yolk, so to speak. And he was coming at us with, was it Buckfast shots and hugs? And I was like, this band is starting. That's what it felt like. That's why you're attracting fans. It's like, this is starting. You've got great skin, so you can tour for 20 years. No one will know how old you are. But
we'll see.
I'm excited to see it, and I'm excited to play if we get a chance, because I learned about 60 things. I remember the first thing I came, talking about mentality, which we have on the show. Like I said, I rocked up. I walked in doing my nervous thing where I sort of sing and say hello to everyone and muck about and carry things. But I went, damn, when was the last time a band this big who could have a reason to be dicks? No. As soon as we got there, it was, how are you doing? What's your name? Thanks for that. Can you give us a hand? This is the changing room. This is where you can hang out. This is your, you go, what the fuck is this? You know, mindset, people, if you can take that home. I've kind of derailed it there, but yeah, talking about deflation.
It's fine. It's kind that you feel like, I don't know, we're just Suffolk lads. Try and be, it's like, you know, it's like, if you think anyone that starts humble stays humble, right? And people who aren't like, people change that much. Like, if you look at bands like Iron Maiden, I love Iron Maiden because they're like one of the biggest rock bands in the world. But if you see any of their documentaries, or a friend of mine works very closely with Bruce Dickinson, just says, he's just a guy. He's just the same guy. Yeah. I mean, an incredible guy, like one of my heroes because of all the crazy stuff he does.
But can you just talk about some of the things? I didn't know this when I read your book. I've had the privilege, but Bruce Dickinson is a bit of an eccentric, but what does that do outside of music, if you don't mind giving context on that?
I mean, for anyone that doesn't know, Bruce Dickinson is like a polymath, I guess you'd call him, in the sense that he does lots of different things. So he is a world-class fencer. He is a pilot. He piloted Iron Maiden's plane.
I remember that, yeah.
He is an entrepreneur in several senses, in the sense that he invests in like tech and aeronautics and stuff. I don't know if that's the right word, but
yeah, definitely
balloons and various other things. He also writes. He's a writer, and he's a stand-up comic pretty much as well, because he does like a lot of, he does this like live show, which is his like solo live show, and it's like an evening with kind of thing, and apparently it's just fucking hilarious. I mean, and that's just some of the things that he's done. He's done loads of others. And yeah, I mention it in the book that I've written about how to me, that's a strength, that kind of,
yes,
the ability to be interested in several different things and pull those experiences into everything that you do. So yeah, I mean, the chapter's called Entrepreneur is a Silly Word, but it's not a dirty one. And it basically just goes on about how, you know, all of these different experiences are strengths. And yeah, I use Bruce Dickinson as an example because he just does what he's passionate. He has this obsession. He follows the obsession, and he just, he uses that to fuel everything he does. And he's true to it. Cause I think the problem with nowadays is conventional wisdom has told lots of us that niching is what you have to do. Like, they're always saying that, whether, you know, you get some TikTok like guru or something saying,
niche down,
like pick your niche and go for it. Like they're just like, blah, 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 be this. And, you know, there is a certain amount of wisdom in that, in the sense that as a marketer as well, like, you need a clear message usually. I mean, it helps to have a clear message, right? But I've just, I don't know, for better or for worse, I've just thought, fuck that. Because I don't know, I'll have to prove my theory correct, but I feel strongly that having lots of strings to your bow is an extremely good thing, and it allows you to creatively solve problems in ways that a lot of other people, so, you know, people like me and you, I've done a lot of things. I own a food business. I've started several businesses. I'm a touring musician. I'm also a branding, like, and marketing strategist. Like, every one of those things I can then pull into the other thing. So
exactly.
In music, I can think, right, what's my experience of dealing with people on the road? How does that allow me to then manage people in my job? what have I seen other creative things have I seen musicians do that I can then apply to, I don't know, a technology company?
Yeah.
Like, you have so many different ideas and interesting ways that you can pull these ideas together that other people wouldn't usually have. And it gives you the confidence to pull on those perspectives and really push them. Again, like, I just feel it's like you're an outsider, but that's a good thing. A lot of people talk about imposter syndrome and how imposter syndrome is this bad thing, but I think it's good. Like, be the imposter, go in there and just like, be like, I am weird. And that's what I've pretty much done my entire life for every job. Like I was, you know, when I left FVK for a bit, I had to go work in an office again as like a credit controller, which is essentially corporate debt collection, but not, it's not like break people's legs, but it's like send people emails and be like, pay your invoice, please. So it's services that they've agreed to and you're just reminding them to pay basically. But I don't know. I always seem to do well in these jobs because I was happy to be different, happy to use my experience and that as to set myself apart and be a little bit more interesting. So I did it with that. I worked for a couple of tech startups as well, and I did loads of different stuff there. And then, yeah, now I consult for marketing and I bring all of that stuff into there. And like, you know, I talk about being able to build cult brands and people find that attractive because I'm a bit different.
Not only are you able to explain it, that's a great consultant, teacher, friend, human, is being able to understand each step and explain it to people, to teacher. But you've done it as well, mate. You cobbled it together in your madness of youth. But also what I want to highlight that you brought out beautifully, when you talk about Bruce Dickinson, he's the singer of Iron Maiden as well, obviously. That's a big one.
Mm.
Everything he chose.
And that.
everything he chose, even his investments are relevant to aeronautics. He's a pilot. Everything he's doing is relevant to that. And his nights with Corey Taylor, does nights with Corey Taylor, and his books are wonderful. Mm. Knowing what you think, even I've taken a leap. Don't think it's a massive leap, but bringing you in, I fucking love hot sauce regardless, right? And even just go and check out his website to see an application of branding on a company. It looks like what you'd expect it to look like. And it's beautifully done. We've talked about who did it, how you did it. You've invested in time in that. You've got to create your own source. You've got this really cool physical representation, an example. Not only do you do cult branding, you can explain it. You explain it beautifully and its practical applications and how it can help you as an artist. You actually do it and you continue to have a mindset that I think is what's most respectable and why we're probably mates, is you're there. You're in a room. You're not too big to talk to people. You're going, hey, can I learn? That's what's really impressive in and amongst the other things you're doing. But, and even earlier, we take your example of people thinking you can only be flamboyant or make great music. No, you can do both. No, you can have 5 eggs. If you take care of those eggs and you put them in the right places, it can be done.
Yeah, it's a skill for sure. You can't, like, because, you know, that conventional wisdom is there for a reason, right? In the sense that if you spread yourself too thin, and I have done that before, you will just, you will crumble. So you've got to be good at managing your own time, and you've got to, if you're going to do that, if you're going to do lots of different things, you've got to be able to utilize that. So actually, you know, use these experiences and bring them into the other things you're doing and make them and bring them together. That's the thing. And that's the one thing I learned. I was like, these things don't need to exist separately.
Yes.
They're not mutually exclusive. They are all part of the weird person that I am. And that is cool. And I think, you know, I've done a lot of thinking recently about, and I don't, you know, don't want to just keep talking about me.
That's relevant. I'll tell you if it's not. Don't worry.
Hopefully it'll help someone else. I've done a lot of thinking about how I want to help people. And the one thing that I could do to, you know, change people's lives, and one thing that I could say, and because ultimately, like you said, I think I read that giver book that you told me about. Anyway, that's another thing. But
it's called The Go Giver, guys. But giver book
the
is...
The Go Giver, yeah.
We're going to do that maybe over a few beers, but yeah.
it's, you know, I've been thinking about this for a while, but if there's one thing that I could do to help people, it would be to give them the confidence to realize that the kind of weird, obsessive person that they are, whether they're obsessive or the weird version of themselves that they are, is okay. And you don't need to hide parts of that. You don't need to like quash any of your eccentricities. You need to highlight them and use them as a tool to stand out in your own, you know, in a very crowded world, right? Like everyone is trying to shout now on social media from the rooftops for some reason or another. And it's also okay if you don't want to do that, but even in like, just even in intimate circumstances, just be yourself, just do it. And like, don't do what I did. If you're talking about mistakes earlier, I compartmentalized these pieces of myself, and it took me writing a book and actually getting solid examples of people that didn't do that, like Bruce Dickinson and stuff like that, to give me the confidence to be like, actually, yeah, that's stupid. This has been stupid. I shouldn't separate these things. They're all parts of me. They're all skills that I have. And, you know, that's why I do all this stupid stuff that I do. I'm going on a TV show next year.
I thought you were about to say, and that's why I thought you were about to diminish what you've been able to do. And
oh, no, no.
No, don't.
I'm fucking by stupid, don't. By stupid, I mean like
stupid in a daft, good way.
Like in a good way. Like as in like you wouldn't, it's not, you know, it's exciting. It's an adventure.
And the TV show, sorry, I nearly jumped in to save you from yourself then, but I didn't need to, TV show.
No, it's all right. Like, you know, next year I'm on a TV show. It's a food TV show, you know, caked in makeup, talking about, you know, music and other things. So it's just, again, that's like a mixed up version of
yeah, but it's not far. It's not far from where you've kept your eggs, mate. You moving your egg to that makes complete sense to me. And having an ecosystem, I think that's maybe something I want to germinate, think about. But that's what you said. I had to learn that lesson before we met. Pretty much actually the week after we met, your show is a big trigger. It's kind of like a big slap in the face as to like, these are all connected. Why are you thinking about everything separately? It's had to then lead me to go and try and rebuild bridges I'd burned because I've been away working too much. But yes, people, it's really relevant, like your ecosystem. So that TV show is very much
an ecosystem is good. I always talk about it like a solar system or an orbit and stuff like that. Yeah, that's a really good analogy. It's literally like the system that is you, and there's loads of parts to it, and it's kind of haphazard in places and like organized in others, but that's cool. If you embrace it and kind of go, yes, this is who I am, you can start using that. Stop thinking about it as a handicap, start thinking about it as a tool, and use those different experiences and ideas to make yourself stand out and make yourself an interesting voice amongst loads of people out there who are just happy to walk the line and happy to stay on that conveyor belt, which is fine if that makes them happy. But in my experience, most people aren't happy. So don't do that.
Mediocrity is quite dangerous, I think, if you take it for expertise. If you know what mediocrity is, it's okay. But at the moment, we live in a world where, you said last time, inflammatory media, I love that, and I've used it again, and I'll continue to use it. But if you think that the media is what would be experts or facts or the truth, then you'll be forever lost, and you'll actually start blaming yourself, which is the problem. Please don't do that, people. But I wanted to just say what you just said there, fucking beautiful summary of the practical reasons, which is what this show is about, is that how do we take what you know to be true, which is hidden, right? Because it's cliche or it's banged at our faces so many times, you don't know what it means anymore. That's what it means. How can you be you and create your own solar system? But what's beautiful about different studio ecosystem and solar system, they do work together, but solar system is the thing in the middle is responsible for everything else that orbits, organizing your time. But also, it's just very difficult to know that you're worth something. Most people I work with, I just had a call before this. All I did was get that person to understand how fucking great they are. And the reason why they're in that call, even if they're asking questions or they're investing in time with coaching or whatever, I go, why are you here? Because you're fucking great. Can you wake up tomorrow? This is a test for anyone listening. Can you wake up tomorrow? Think of 9 things that you really like about yourself. Not one. Because we're used to the other thing. We'll see 9 shit things and 1 good thing. That is not how we were made to live. We used to live in a village where 1 horrific thing happens and the rest was quite pleasant and we got along with each other. 9 things to 1. That was my soapbox moment. So I'm just going to step down and you can take from that what you will, Kia.
No, that's great. I love it. like ninth. I think I'd struggle with that. It's hard to try out.
I stole that. It's from Stephen Bartlett was speaking to, his name's gone, 1 billion happy guy. And that's, it just makes sense when you think about it, but it's really hard. Even the fact that's difficult. How can we value ourselves more and understand, like you just said, it was there the whole time. Everything you needed was there the whole time. That I think is quite empowering when I'm inspiring people, because a lot of maybe people come to me or in general, or anyone, like even as you, a consultant or as a friend, they come lacking, thinking they lack.
Yeah.
Whereas your book was fucking awesome. We're still in that insight phase of how do we name it to reflect the feeling. Obsession is very strong testing one from what I've seen, but you have everything you need. And when I read it, it was this kind of strange period and I was not doing too well. And I picked up your book and I went, oh shit, that is exactly how I wish I'd had it read back to me and structured and ordered to give me confidence. Whereas I'd learned it in strange orders. That's why this book for me is no question. I believe in it, and there may be fine tuning in what we can do. But yeah, I think it's awesome. And obsession's key. Understanding you're fucking weird. That's what this show is as well. Callum and I are like, we're super nerds. I bet there's more super nerds. There's loads, but they're quite odd.
Yeah.
Like you, mate.
I mean, yeah. So, I mean, relating to this, this is a songwriting podcast, obviously, but like all of this applies to the same thing. You can't be a great songwriter unless you let go of some of these preconceptions and you just do what is truly you. And it was Rick Rubin that basically said what I just said. He's like one of the greatest producers of all time, at least in the he's a creative producer,
like you said, because producers I think like talk about mediocrity online, you might see producers in as they are, you know, with their keyboard and their lights set up and their perfect backgrounds and going, this is what I do, I am an expert. Now Rick Rubin sits down with Pharrell Williams, Kendrick Lamar in his garden in a horrible t-shirt with a terribly out of touch beard and just goes, so tell me Jay-Z, what's this, so tell me Justin, so tell me Post. I think that guy's very brave. He's constantly changing and learning.
The thing that he said was, and I might have said it last time on the podcast, but I don't care. I'm saying it again.
I don't care.
That you just do be your own biggest fan. Like that's it. Just create shit that you love and then naturally, and promote it. Don't just think you can just create stuff that you love and people will magically find it.
What? You can't just put it online.
Yeah, you've got to work hard as well, but start with creating stuff that you really love and then you'll find other people like you, and you can't go wrong like that. It might not always be in vogue, it might not always be the stuff that like is popular at the time, but people see it from a mile off. They'll see that lack of authenticity from a mile off.
God, yeah.
It's like, I don't know, Sam Smith's new song, right? That strikes me as a thing that he just, it's not anything like anything I've heard, you know, the Body Shop band. Yeah, I just love it. So good. And I don't feel like he went in the studio and was like, oh, let's make a song like this. Let's listen to that other artist and make a song like this. He just went in and just created this beautiful, weird, like multi-layered choral pop song. And it came and it was amazing. And, you know, Sam Smith's just living his best life at the moment. Yeah. Just being true to themselves. They are they now, right? I think they changed.
I have no idea.
And then went back.
I'm a bit granddad with that stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't remember if there'd been another change. That doesn't. But yeah, that song's amazing.
No, it does. I just don't know. I don't want to put my foot in my mouth. But I'm not scared
to. Yeah, I don't want to get it wrong.
We're good at putting foot in mouths, and I think that's actually that's the key to going forward. But I actually think, when you speak about Rick Rubin again, I would not be against you closing every show with that same quote, because it's just the truth. And you said authenticity. I've just got off a call with a manager, Jodie Brunning. She's been on the show. She was speaking to an artist in Jones Club, which we'll talk about another day. Authenticity, she said it as well. People know. If you don't care, even if you're singing a song, these perfectly produced songs, you know, when you hear those, you go, this person doesn't care about that thing. Despite the thousands of pounds that have gone into their vocals, production, writing, you can put a team around someone, but if it's not authentic, people will smell it, in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you're just going to be kidding yourself as well. Like I said before, I think I I don't like serial entrepreneurs for that reason. I don't like it when people just chase the side effect, like money or something. Like, fine, we need money and it's okay to want it, but that shouldn't be the motivation. The motivation should be, I love this. I'm obsessed with it. I just want to get it out into the world and share my passion with other people, especially when it comes to music.
I was just about to say, that's you, mate, because you started this show, and I wanted to say, you starting a label, getting a distro deal, living together, deciding to do this kind of music in this way, leaving Beckles and going, fuck it, I'm going for it. That's almost like trying to do a water dance and pull water out of the ground, trying to get money out of music, and you did it in a genre that wasn't in vogue because you loved it. You're kind of that person, I think, that does deserve visibility and success, shall we say, from this day forward, because of that, having proven I love this and I'm going to do it. That's why I believe in you as a human. And then I'm like, okay, now he's got a company. Okay, cool. He's doing all this stuff with the band I can learn from. Okay, cool. He's doing this book, which has personally helped me. So that's the litmus test. Boom, I'm keen for it. People that come to this show are nerds like me, who are a bit weird, that help me. It's just very obvious to me what you offer to the world. Again.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm getting there. I want to help people. I've not always been as selfless as I could have been.
It's okay.
And I think that's not because I didn't want to be. It's because, you know, everyone gets wrapped up in their own shit, don't they? They're just like, oh.
Yeah, but you wrote about it. You used it to help people. I'm not pretending that I've done anything special yet, but when we met, we both were at a point where we went, yep, that guy's weird as shit. So am I. And it was a subconscious thing. And we never really said it. But we met each other as we are. You go from here. You have today and onwards. I think that's what's special. And, you know, we get excited about, what's the book called? How does this brand thing, you know, what does this sauce taste like? What does this song sound like? But when you put that on a scale, you get people queuing at a sold out show round the fucking venue twice just to say hello to you. And you all, I don't think that's something to be overlooked, even on a scale that you could humbly consider. Yes, it's not Ali Pali or the O2, but that doesn't matter to me. Is that proven within a context that could be blown up? You know, you guys support Youngblood, yeah, you guys support MCR. That makes complete sense to me.
Yeah. Again, it's just, that's another thing, a mistake I made before. I think it's quality over quantity of a lot of these things. Like, yeah, that's kind of my mantra now, in the sense that I'd rather have 1,000 people that adore what I do and live and breathe it than I would have 100,000 that are kind of bit. And that's just the drum that I'm going to keep banging. Again, it's okay. Like, you don't need to feel inferior because you see someone post a photo in front of their car on Instagram that they probably lease monthly anyway. Like, that kind of, or the amount of followers someone might have on Twitter. It's like, you know, it's better to have 100 ones that read everything that you do than it is to have a million. But that
I think you've hit on something I want to maybe coin and maybe bring forward. I would call your stand-up followers. If that makes sense. You can go and check out Kia Kemp, check out Condomaniac, whatever. They're stand-up followers. I think everyone that follows you, if you push them, they'd stand up again. If it was like you post something that was weird, they go, oh, well, why is that? And they want to find out. They wouldn't desert you unless you started doing truly psychotic things. Fine, do that. But it's the same. Even the followers I started again, and it's a very small number when you look at comparative, but I go, do the list and I go, God, I've met everyone, or I know everyone, or I'm interested in what they're doing. I'm constantly trying to be involved. I think you have what are called stand-up followers. And I want to talk about that maybe again on another segment, but the power of that. Like you said, the classic 1,000 fans. It's a cliche, but you've got far more than that from what I can tell. And maybe you need 6,000-7,000 to support all the guys in your band. Yeah, make that going. But I can see that the ceiling for you, and you're not near it. You know, if I thought you were near the ceiling, selfishly, I'd be like, this is probably not the guy to invest time and hang out with. Of course, I'm going to be selfish and self-interested. I would encourage everyone to be that. But there's an ethical way to do that. And I think what you're doing is great. Proven as well with your products that they've got taste awards inside of fucking birth. It's like, before you come out of the womb, you've got a taste award. Like, how do you do that? That's interesting. Plus your band and the way you are and the way you treat people, the way you look after yourself. I think it's pretty fucking impressive. And I hold myself to a very high arrogant standard.
It's the only reason I'm doing these things now, just so I can get compliments. Yeah. Nah,
get a bit joking. Of
but yeah, to take from that thing, for your listeners to take from that is, I don't know, what should they take from that?
What I found is we just said that I know these people because some of them are close friends. I have people that hit me from different demographics straight away when something's up, and I know when it's landed. There's some very fucking smart people that have not made themselves known yet, and I do my best to be honest about mistakes and problems, progress and mindset, as you do naturally. They will take a lot from this, and I guess because we can ramble forever, and we will, especially when we get in person. I do not envy anyone who's sitting next to us when we hang out next. But is there anything you want to close off today's with? And feel free to talk about the company. Feel free to talk about what you're excited about. Floor is yours.
I think if there is a theme from what we've been talking about today, it's the fact that the unique person that you are is a strength, not a weakness. All parts of that unique person. So, and that kind of factors into my life. It factors into the music and the company and the consulting that I do. It's, yeah, it sounds like such a wanker when you do consulting, but hey.
No, we are wankers. It's fine.
But that's it. You know, there's no better word. I'm sorry. I am a wanker. Sorry to reiterate. All those different parts are a strength, and they create the fabric of what you are. I know it sounds cheesy, but the sooner you start embracing that, the sooner you start going, I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm a musician in this meeting, or I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm really into books, or I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm actually a dab hand when it comes to design. I'm not going to hide the fact that, I don't know, I worked helping as a mechanic when I was younger. All these experiences create the person that you are, and they all have something that they can lend to what you're doing now. So that's what I did. I just went, I do a lot of weird things. I do a lot of different things, but they all somehow come together to become the person that I am. And I'm not going to be for everyone, and that doesn't matter. And that's, I guess, where we can wrap up, because that's down to the cult thing. You don't have to be for everyone. You don't have to appeal to everyone. But there are people out there that are going to need exactly what you are, whatever that might be. So it's like there are people out there that are going to need to hear exactly what you have to say. Now, that's not going to be the whole world necessarily. It might become the whole world, but start with that. Start with that message and the unique thing that you bring, and share it.
Preach. We shall end it on that. That's fucking beautifully said. Thank you as ever, mate, and I'll see you on the next one.
My pleasure.
To find out more about us and to get in touch, please head over to I Wish I Knew That Pod on Instagram, and don't forget to join the conversation on our Facebook community. Please also remember to email your questions about songwriting to iwishinewthatpod@gmail.com, and we will answer these on our upcoming episodes. Also, if you know someone who would benefit from this, we would really love it if you could give it a share or subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. And Jamie and I will talk to you on the next episode.